Can't wait.
All right, good morning. I will call to order our regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, July 26, 2016, and ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you and good morning. We'll start, as we always do, with public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. Is there anybody wishing to do so? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll go to consideration of minutes from July 19th.
I'd make a motion to accept the minutes from that meeting.
And I'll second. Any corrections, additions, or notations?
None.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Minutes passed or approved. Personnel actions as listed.
I would make a motion to approve the personnel listed on our agenda.
And I'll second. Discussion. Yeah. Chief.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consideration of claims for the 28th.
I make a motion to accept the claims as submitted.
And I'll second. Chief.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Claims passed. Consent agenda, please add road closure 1702.
I would make a motion to accept the consent agenda as listed, but I would like to pull out and have a little explanation on number three on this ELP building just for personal information in regards to what the groundwater hazard statement means.
All right. So I've got a motion to approve the consent agenda with number three pulled, and I'll second that. Chief?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda passes with number three pulled, which is consideration of deed, declaration of value, and groundwater hazard statement for CLP building administration sale. Ethan, how about coming up and talking us through this one so we can deal with it?
Morning, Ethan.
Morning. Yes, this is just one of the standard documents in a deed or transfer package. And so it's one of the disclosures that the sellers are required to complete, which discloses to the buyer any known hazards. So it includes solid waste, it includes private burial sites, it includes those types of things. So I'd anticipate when it's filled out, that'll be a no to all of the above, but I'm not sure. I'll maybe go with Cal and double check if there's any private burial sites.
Yeah, so just a required disclosure from an owner as it's sold, and we're nearing the end of this process with Optima Life Services to get to their ownership of that building. We did have a drunk driver hit the building the other day, which is highly unfortunate.
Yes.
But we're almost at the end, and we're just going through what we've got to go through to get it done. Any other questions?
I have none. Appreciate the clarity.
All right, so then I would take a motion to consider to approve the deed, declaration of value, and groundwater hazard statement.
So moved.
And I'll second. Further discussion. Chief.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. It passes. No public hearing items today, so we're to additional items. Discussion and consideration of resolution 1706, Grant Acres Residential Partial Subdivision. And Emily is going to present to us that.
Hi, Emily.
Application for the Grant Acres Residential Parcel Subdivision. The property is located at 57730 270th Street outside of Ames. The applicants, Richard and Andrea Nelson, are the property owners. Rick is here today if you have any questions for him. Looking at the city map, this property is located about 2¾ miles from southeast of Ames in Grant Township.
All
Here's a little bit of the information surrounding zoning. The property is zoned A1. The property is in blue here. It is near to the Sand Hill Trail subdivision, which is just north of the property, and also the Hines Agricultural Subdivision. This property is part of the CPU Agricultural Subdivision that took place in 1997. Here we have, just real quick, 580th here and 270th here. There are 40 parcels within a half mile of this property. 18 parcels have single-family dwellings, and those are the ones in yellow. And 14 parcels highlighted in blue have the potential for single-family dwellings. That just means they meet the 35-acre minimum requirement for the single-family home in the A1 district. Here's the proposed plat for the Grand Acres subdivision. There's two development lots. The development lot with existing dwelling here is lot one to the northeast. To the northwest is the proposed lot two for a future single-family dwelling. And the third area here is outlot A, which is currently in row crops, and the intention is to continue to keep that in production. Here we have just some easements. There's a 30-foot water line easement along 270th. And a 16.5-foot fiber optic line easement along the east side of the lot where the existing dwelling is located. Engineering also asked that the applicant provide a 30-foot easement for access to lot A in case it is sold in the future. So the total size of this parcel is 35.83 acres. Lot 1 is about 5.5 acres. Let's see, in lot 1 here. And lot 2 is proposed to be 4 acres. Outlot A would be just over 26 acres. And 22 of that is in the floodplain. Currently... in the unsubdivided parcel, 28 acres are in agricultural.
All of lot 2 is in agricultural.
Yep. So here are the properties to the west of the proposed subdivision. There's a nearly 6-acre property and then about 4.78-acre property to the west. And these are located here to the west of proposed lot 2. This is a property to the east of the proposed subdivision. Once again, that's over here next to the existing dwelling. The property to the north is a 40-acre parcel in egg production, primarily in egg production. So the history of the subject property, it's in the north half of Section 32 in Grant Township. The current lot is lot 3 of the CPU Agricultural Subdivision that was completed in 1997. And proposed lot 1, where the existing dwelling was built in 2008, was taken out of agricultural production about that same time. Here's an aerial of the existing home. Once again, lot 2 is to the west there, and then the outlot is to the south. Here's lot 1, current lot 1. Here's just another aerial, lot 1, lot 2, the proposed easement for access to outlot A. Here's some photos of proposed lot 2. And these are just the applicable regulations for residential parcel subdivision. I won't go through them, but it's intended for residential use. It doesn't create more than 2 residential lots. There's already an existing dwelling. So it meets all of our standards for the residential parcel subdivision. comments from the interagency review. Like I said before, the engineering did ask for an easement to Outlot A, just in case it is sold in the future. Environmental health didn't have any concerns. We just asked for a little more information on the plat to meet all of our requirements. And we also just wanted to know the intention for Outlot A. We did ask that there would be a note on the plat saying that Outlot A is not for development.
Okay.
And that's on there. So I think that's about it for that. The floodplain development coordinator also requested that Outlot A would not be developed in the future, since it is in the floodplain. Much of it is in the floodplain, and I can... Yeah, so about 22 acres is in the floodplain here.
And the floodplain doesn't touch either of the other two proposed lots?
Nope. So in summary, the existing parcel was created in 1997 through the CPU Ag subdivision. The existing dwelling is constructed in 2008 and is on proposed lot one. The proposed subdivision would create one additional residential development lot, and Outlot A is intended to stay in ag production. Not within the Ames Urban Fringe. There are single family homes located in the area, and it is near one subdivision, the Sand Hill Trail subdivision. Okay, so the alternatives, staff is recommending alternative one. The Story County Board of Supervisors approves the residential parcel subdivision plat Grand Acres subdivision as put forth in case SUV 0516. And the owner, once again, is here if you have any questions for him.
Super. I don't at this point. Marty, I don't know if you do. We've got Trish Patrick who would like to address us and I think has a couple questions. And so unless you would like to start somewhere else, I'd like to start there.
No, let's go there.
Trish, let's have you come up now. Yeah, please. And while you've written it down here, just since we're recording everything, how about starting with your name and your address? How are you this morning?
I'm fine, thank you.
Thanks for being here.
My name is Trish Patrick, and I live at 57540 270th Street, Ames. We're the property owners directly west of the proposed division. Earlier this year when we noticed surveying being done on the property, we did talk to Rick and Andrea about what was going on, and they said that zoning laws had changed, so they were able to subdivide the property. Originally in 97 when we did it, they were very strict about us putting in the covenants and everything that no additional divisions could be done unless it was for additions to already existing property owners. But I realized that rules change. And I don't blame them. If I owned it, I would want to do the very same thing. But I wish I did own it. But I did have a question when I received the notice of this meeting. I didn't realize you could do a subdivision within a subdivision. So will this property be part of the CPU subdivision, or does that one no longer exist? I mean, how...
Emily, can you address that?
I can try to.
Okay.
The CPU subdivision will still exist, but within that, within the lot three of the CPU subdivision, that will be further subdivided.
And so will they be restricted by the covenants that we... that are on record for the CPU subdivision?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Jared?
Yeah, that would be my understanding that all those covenants would still
apply
in effect and apply
okay.
to this as
that
well.
Well, and so the board today has the opportunity to express that that's what our expectation is, right?
Correct.
Rick, any issues with that? So we're talking about the same covenants apply to this lot too if it's put together that applies to everybody else in the area.
If everybody gets developed, it'll be my name too. So
yeah.
Well, and yeah, but you'll have no control over it either.
Right.
Well, for the property across the road from us at one time was subdivided, I think, by Roger Nelson at that time, and we didn't object to it because we knew he wanted to build a house and sell this other one. But the people that purchased it following him immediately put up the Doggy Dude Ranch, which we had not anticipated
right.
that type of activity, and has not always been very pleasant. I mean, we like the people that are there. They're very nice, but their dogs in the kennels are facing our property, which is a...
Well, it's completely...
Yeah.
My view is it's completely reasonable that you should know what to expect.
And so I know in the covenants that we had for the CPU, there was... part of it was that none of the people could cause smells or noise or things that would be a problem. You know, it... I think we even had large feed lots in there or something, you know. But, yeah, I was just curious how you had a subdivision within a subdivision and exactly how that impacted, you know, impacted us. And so it sounds like you pretty much answered those questions. And I think what they're doing is totally legal. And in 20 years, rules change. I know we went through a lot of hoops just trying to get what we did just to get a little extra ground for ourselves, and seems like maybe it's a little easier now than it used to be. So
easier to create one for sure. Yeah, to split off and do exactly what we're talking about doing here today.
Right.
But I think it's a completely reasonable request that we would expect that this new lot be bound by the same covenants that that the neighbors are bound by.
And in reality, that covenant only has another 9 months or so. I mean, it's a 20-year thing, and then you need to either renew them or such, and so we only hard to tell if they'd have a house built by then. So but I'm just trying to understand what's going on.
Absolutely. Well, thank you.
So,
any other questions? Anything else that you'd like to have us address?
No, I think you pretty much have covered it. Thank you.
Jerry, as I read this, if the board were to decide to approve this with the condition that that lot abide by the same covenants that everybody else in CPU abide by, that would be option number two on here, is that right?
That could be.
Approve it with it, and that would be the condition that I'm suggesting that the board consider.
And we'll shepherd that.
No objection from you.
We'll shepherd that to make sure that happens.
How close is this to the Irvin French, Ames Irvin French plant? You said it's not
about 3/4 of a mile.
Okay, just out of it.
Any other questions?
No, I believe this is very straightforward, and I think that I have comfort with approving. So,
you want to make a motion or me to?
I will make a motion that we adopt Resolution 1706, Grand Acres Residential Parcel Subdivision.
And I would just ask, do you intend to have the additional condition that the outlot in lot two will...
With the maintenance of the covenant as on the contiguous landowners.
And I'll second that motion. Clear? What we're trying to do? Very clear? Okay. Further discussion?
None.
Chief?
All right.
Sanders, aye. It passes with the condition. Thank you.
Thank you.
You guys are welcome to stay. Don't feel like you have to. Next item is discussion consideration.
How will this affect the A1 property across the road?
Across the road? I don't think it affects the A1 property taxes at all. Yep. Yes, sir. Next is... Discussion and consideration of violence in the workplace policy, 7-day review, Alyssa Luton. All right, Alyssa, when last we left this, you were going to take it back to the safety committee and look at alternatives.
Correct. So what we've done since, has it been 3 weeks, 4 weeks? I can't remember. When it was first brought to the board for discussion, is I did reach out to counties, also cities. There are about 17 of them that I received their policies, reviewed them, saw how they handled things. We did go to the safety committee last week, had a discussion on this, just the portion of the policy that refers to weapons in the workplace is what we took to the safety committee. They did make a recommendation. That recommendation is in the policy draft that you saw attached to the agenda.
Did you mirror anybody else's policy? Or
we did.
You
we
at?
Did. The language that we used in the weapons portion of it comes directly from the Polk County policy.
We brought it by our insurance carrier?
We did. We took it to both the liability carrier and also the work comp carrier, because those are the two insurances that would be affected by any claims that we would have here. They were comfortable with that language. That language does leave the authority with the Board of Supervisors.
All right, so let's just read that portion of the policy, and then we'll go back and talk about the rest of it. As far as weapons, Story County prohibits all employees from carrying handguns, firearms, explosives, or weapons of any kind on the county property. County property includes, without limitation, all county parking lots, buildings leased and owned, grounds and vehicles used for county business. Employees who are off county property but performing a task for the county are covered by this policy. This section of the policy shall not apply to county employees who are authorized to use weapons in the performance of their job responsibilities, such as sheriff, or for those who are authorized to use hazardous tools or devices as bona fide portions of their job. And you say that's straight out of the Polk County.
That is word for word out of the Polk County policy. Yep.
Other changes to the policy as you went through and looked at it?
You know, when I went through and looked at our old policy under prohibited conduct listed a lot of, like, specific acts that are prohibited. In here, they're more broad. So if you look at all those, it's not a all-inclusive. I mean, we can't write a policy with everything word for word in it, what would be considered as an act that we would be, you know, consider as violence. So those are more broad. The reporting and investigation procedures is just a little different. We do not have a form they fill out. They contact their supervisor and HR, and we do the investigation based on that information. We're trying to make it as simple. We want our employees, first and foremost, their safety and security is the most important thing here. And we put everything in this policy to try to encompass what we would consider violence and how we're going to take care of any situation that arises. We take every situation seriously, even if, you know, at first glance it doesn't look like it's anything. We don't dismiss that. We do a thorough investigation and make sure that that our everything is safe and secure here for our employees.
As you were looking into the other county policies, being new to this, and I understand that the board retains at its level the ability to decide who, in fact, would be permitted to carry. Mm-hmm. Is that what you found in other counties?
I did. There were a few counties that they do not allow weapons by employees or the public on their premises. The majority of them, it was they don't allow employees unless authorized by a governing, like the Board of Supervisors. In cities, it was the city manager and the police chief. I mean, they don't just give a policy that has open carry of weapons in the workplace. I did not find that.
Right. Other questions? Okay. Any questions from anybody in the audience? If we approve this today, it goes to 7-day review. I'd ask that we take the additional step, simply because I made the commitment that we would take the additional step of opening up to the public for comment as well during that same time. So I just ask that it be put out on the website, letting people know that if they want to comment on this before we come back and revisit it in 7 days, they're welcome to.
Okay.
And these comments would be directed to?
They typically are, you know, I usually put in there they can either respond back to me directly, or they can contact one of the board members.
Absolutely.
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. If there's no further discussion, I would take a motion to approve pending 7-day review workplace the violence in the workplace policy.
I would make a motion to approve the violence in the workplace policy for a 7-day review and bring it back to us in a week.
And I'll second. Further discussion.
Yeah.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. 7-day review. Give everybody who wants to weigh in a chance to weigh in.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Alyssa, for all you did.
All right. No agency reports today. Departmental reports, planning and development. Quarterly report. Jerry and Emily again.
What's that?
See if that button got hit. It's on.
It's on.
Yeah.
Green.
Green means go.
Green means go.
Connie, have a good day.
All right, we're doing a second quarter update, April, May, June, and we provided some analysis from the previous 2 years as well. We're going to provide some information about the permits that we received, some of the development cases, a code compliance case update. We've got a street name change in the works, actually two of them. And then we thought it would be a good idea to bring some work program items. Each year, the planning and development staff sits down with the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board of Supervisors and work out some things that we need to work on outside of the daily activities that we receive. And so we've got two things that we want to bring to you today. One is an update that we did doing site reviews on mobile home parks. Emily is going to talk about that. And Amelia, when she started in June, started working on the item that I'm going to be talking about, which is the C&D construction demolition site process. So starting off with the permits that we received, you can see we're on the upward slide from the previous 2 years. Again, this is just the second quarter. As to be expected, accessory structures, most number of permits, followed by single family homes, and then miscellaneous permits, which includes like commercial projects. We actually have had a few commercial improvements over the last few months. So we're up a few from last year, and then that's down from the previous year.
What, Jerry, what's an accessory structure?
Detached building, garage, that would not be attached to a single-family home.
Okay.
So we separate those out. The burgundy color would be addition to a house and would also include, like, an attached garage.
All right.
So that's the burgundy color. Accessory is the darker blue.
I like that slide.
You like that? Valuations are up about $500,000 from the previous quarter, which is nice to see.
After being reasonably flat for a few years, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then just up a little bit from the previous year. So that's a good thing. Other departmental activities, addresses are up. Emily's has that charge. She's been busy addressing new single-family home sites. Total property research is up a little bit, especially from the previous 2 years. What's down, though, is the home business permit applications from the previous second quarter from the previous year. However, we're reviewing a lot of renewals right now. Into the development cases, Martin Marietta, we're going to start with conditional use permits. Martin Marietta did get approval from the Board of Adjustment with conditions to add a 2,700 square foot building for employees. They're going to use it for employee meetings. They're going to put a lab in there to analyze the materials that they're extracting. It also included an AMFO drop, ammonium nitrate fuel oil drop, which is like a 6-inch hole that starts at the surface. They drill down several hundred feet to the lower level, drops fuel down to a container that they use to do the blasting of the materials that they extract. So
where is that building going to go on their property?
It's going to be on the north side, kind of the northeast side of the actual operation site, but northern portion. They're going to use the existing drive and access that goes out to North Dayton.
Oh,
they
wow.
are proposing to not necessarily pave, but they're going to do like a asphaltic surface, which will be kind of a hard coating to help with dust control.
But they're still going to have their trucks coming and going off of Riverside.
Correct. Yeah, it's primarily going to be used for employees.
Good.
Occasionally, in the past, they've had trucks coming in
right.
empty for projects that they've been working on north of their site. They still want that flexibility, but for the most part, any truck that's leaving full with materials will be using the south access. So you'll have a zoning permit and a development plan to review probably in a few weeks. The Ames Golf and Country Club is adding a golf cart building and a maintenance building. That's before conceptual review. The issue there is we've got R2 zoning and A1 zoning. Currently, golf course, these buildings, that for that use is something that's not permitted. It could be permitted through a conditional use permit, so that's what we're going through right now.
Okay, and so they're planning on getting rid of their existing, it's a maintenance and cart building that's one building. They're planning on getting rid of that as part of the development.
Correct.
So now you're saying they're going to build two, one for each.
Yeah, the maintenance building is where the two family homes will be located in the western, west of the clubhouse. And they want to build a golf cart building east of where that maintenance building was.
Okay.
And the maintenance building they're proposing, actually between there's three proposed lots for single family homes. They're proposing to place it in between those.
So that's along 190.
Off of 190.
Okay.
So there's a lot of questions there that we're going to be asking when we do the review on that. Why not cluster them at least close to the clubhouse? For some reason, what they submitted was to have that maintenance building again between those two or. Yeah, between those three proposed lots off of 180 golf cart east of where that existing maintenance building is. So we're going to be working through those issues. Subdivisions, Holy Grounds off of Pleasant Valley Road. It's really kind of a re-subdivision, three-lot minor plat. Information has been routed. That's going to go before Planning and Zoning Commission in August. Grant Acres, Emily discussed this morning, and it was approved with conditions. The Irons, we just talked about that. They actually submitted a plat of survey to deal with the land transfer ownership issue from golf course from Bella Homes. So that's been reviewed, routed, and dealt with. And we're in the mode of working with them on the construction schedule, letter of credit, and improvement agreement. Timber Road Estates, that was... a plat that was before you a few years ago. It's east of Kelly, five single-family home lots, a little over an acre to under 5 acres. The Board of Supervisors extended their improvement agreement until September 1, so we're shepherding that.
Good.
Site development plans, Key Cooperative off of 620th Avenue. They are proposing to build a pretty large building for grain storage. They're calling it a flat building, horizontal building instead of vertical, like silo, 51,000 square feet. With the way they were orientating it on their site, it didn't meet the county's requirements, so they're acquiring more land. So again, once they get through that, you'll have a zoning permit and a development plan to review. Code compliance, the property west of Zering, we did go to court in June, and it got deferred until August 1. We're going to go back out this week, and hopefully that'll all be dealt with. Primarily what we're looking at still is they've got piles of concrete, pretty large pieces of broken apart concrete that they need to deal with. Road renaming, as I mentioned, Grant to Hyde. Again, that's north of Ames. We're going to be sending notices August 12. This will be before the Board of Supervisors August 30th for the first consideration only.
And so that would become Hyde all the way to 190th.
Correct.
North of 190th, it would still be 530th. And then when you get to Gilbert, it would be Gretton.
Okay. And again, Ames is going through their process of responding to this as well.
Okay.
Maple Avenue will be changed.
Jared, before you go on, how many properties does this impact?
The Hyde?
Yes.
It's like eight.
Eight properties that currently are on Grant. Lots. This is changed.
Talking probably like three or four single family dwellings.
Okay. On the Gray property up there in Zering, you go back and nothing's been done. That's been an eyesore for a long period of time, and I believe you're likely to find that it's not been done. What are you going to do?
Well, we've been working with him. This is probably one of the first things I took on when I started about a year ago. And he has removed a lot of stuff. There were vehicles there, engines, transmissions, construction, demolition, debris. He was in the construction, demolition, debris business. So we've been working with him. We're down, I think, to primarily the concrete material. But I think after the first, we can issue, the judge can render a fine. I mean, the goal has been to get the property cleaned up and not deal with the money aspect of it. But he can be fined every day. up to like $750 each day that he's in violation. And this is something that we'd be working with the county attorney's office on if he is not compliant on August 1.
Thank you.
Yep. West of Nevada, we're going to be working on a road name change only, not address change, from Maple Avenue to West Maple Avenue. And it's going to extend from the corporate limits out to the north-south T intersection. And this will be before the Board of Supervisors August 9th.
Yep.
Work program items. Again, we've got two things that we want to talk to you about. One is we had a charge of considering a site for construction, demolition, landfill debris. The first thing that's very important to know is that we've got a 28E agreement with the City of Ames that we've had since 1974. We've been working with emergency management, who's been very, very helpful throughout this process. They think that we're on the right track. We've also been before the Planning and Zoning Commission. They're happy with what we told them. There's still a lot of work to do. And each time we talk with Keith, we learn something new. So there's a lot of parts to this. So it's important to know that we have a 28-year agreement with the City of Ames, with the Resource Recovery Facility and the Boone Landfill. We can't work in a bubble. We've got to work with them. We intend to do that. Some of the components in that 2080 agreement say that Story County shall support the Ames solid waste disposal system, provide disposal of all garbage and solid waste through the Ames system, and it talks about Ames establishing rules and procedures for the types of materials that would be delivered to an accepted landfill. We also have a comp plan that was last approved 2009. Story County is involved in that, as is the city's. Also involves the City of Ames. There's also other counties involved, Boone County, there's exception of the City of Jefferson, but there's other counties involved, other cities involved. One thing that I noted in the plan, I was trying to get a confirmation to this before the meeting, is that there was a site on Watt Street in Ames. I don't think it's the font. They did collect the commercial construction demolition debris. I don't think they do any longer. And there's also a note that says, you know, there is no other place other than the Boone County landfill. So this is very important.
We hope it's not. We hope it's not something that we need. But right. When we need it, then's not the time to figure it out.
Right. It's almost kind of too late. Uh-huh. So we also have a Story County debris management plan that was provided to us. And the intention is that the efforts that we would go through here would be included in that plan. You know, it talks about the roles. It's primarily set up to help cities and the county deal with disasters and the management of debris, collection, processing, and disposal. So it talks about the staff roles and responsibilities, collection, public information, which is very important.
Sure. And now emergency management has asked every municipality to pass an ordinance requiring segregation of debris in this event, where we're not picking up multiple types of debris and taking it. We could pick up building materials and the different types of debris separated by the owners of the affected property.
Right.
I don't know how many of our municipalities have actually passed that ordinance.
Yeah, well, each time we talk to them, they think with the work that we've done so far, and primarily Amelia, she's been working very hard on this, he thinks we're almost light years away ahead of other jurisdictions and at least thinking about these kinds of things. But like I said, the more we talk to them, the more we learn about things that we need to think about. So a little bit of background. The focus of the project is having a plan in place that responds to debris from primarily residential areas. We've got some pockets of residential development south of Nevada, north of Ames, some of the agricultural areas. What I hear, though, from some of the emergency management staff is a lot of times the agricultural users tend to take care of things independently on their own. But we also have, like, commercial industrial properties, a few, to think about. And then, too, what about county-owned facilities, lands and buildings? And then, too, measures to take if the Boone County landfill is taxed or overwhelmed. There's provisions in the state laws that suggest that we need to have another option available. But again, we have to work through the system that we have in place through that 28E agreement. As far as our process, the county landfill siting requires a conditional use permit in A1, A2, commercial, light industrial, and heavy industrial district. If we did find a location that's in an A1 district, we have a requirement to do a LISA, land assessment, site analysis, and if it has a high number, the code says it can't be used, and it shouldn't be used because that means it's a productive, agricultural productive property. The other thing, too, is we are to consider state law a reference to a solid waste transfer site station. There's requirements that you can't locate in a floodplain. You have to be 500 feet from a residence or a health care facility. Mm-hmm. Amelia put together this awesome chart that shows Iowa code and county code requirements. The blue are areas potentially that we could locate, which is a good thing, probably half the property. But then you need to get into the nitty-gritty, you know, which things are we going to pursue? Sheriff sale properties, tax sale properties, you know, we would need to work with the treasurer's office through that process. County-owned properties, are there conservation areas that we can think about using?
Marty, don't you love the idea of using the county home?
You need a motion.
That's right across the street. That's right across the street for Marty.
You can scratch that, buddy.
Yeah, Emily came across this. The thing about that is we learned through the review of this that there is a cemetery on this site.
Right.
Just the public perception is probably not the best location to bring construction demolition.
Goodness.
Plus, it's not a very large site.
Right, yeah.
But we threw it out there. The private sector, industrial or commercial properties, we can maybe team up with, especially sites that are used to dealing with intensive uses, maybe like an extraction type use or something where they've got large, expansive areas. We probably need, and again, it kind of depends on what the actual disaster is that we're dealing with, but maybe a 5 to a 15-acre site. When you talk about debris piles and truck maneuvering, you're going to need a bigger site than probably like the county home site. Teaming up with other governmental entities or maybe Iowa State, possibly. Is there a potential of leasing like private property? So this kind of brings us to this map, which shows us options. Yellow or the orange are tax sale properties. Green is A2 properties, agricultural business properties. The red represents commercial, light industrial, and blue is heavy industrial. And the purple is the county home. Assumptions, we're told that if there's a declaration from the president or the governor, things get it's a little easier to do things sometimes. Like maybe tipping hours can be extended, the days can be extended. There's some lax lessening of burning requirements. However, you know, we were told that there's a permit that's required now that cities are required to submit to get approval prior to, you know, finding a site to do burning or whatnot from previous disasters. The other assumption is, are we dealing with just unincorporated areas, the residential, commercial, businesses, county-owned facilities? What kind of materials are we going to get? You know, we're planning on commercial construction and demolition materials, but will we get household hazardous waste? Are we going to get tree limbs, the white items, the appliances, that kind of thing? If we do, then we need to have probably consultants dealing with those things. And then, two, should we try to recycle what we can instead of ultimately landfilling this material? And all of this kind of gets to what's going to cost, what's the budget, how much would be reimbursed from FEMA. We're told from emergency management that if through their rules and regulations, the applicants can get the materials to like a road right away, a lot of that stuff can be reimbursed or is reimbursable. So it gets to action steps. Picking a site, again, we need to continue to work with the emergency management. We have to stay within the confines of our agreement in the 28E. There's an application process to get pre-approved through the DNR, which is something that we should do. RFP process, again, you know, what consultants do we need to work with, our third-party operators. Again, if we're going to use an A1 district, we've got to go through our process, conditional use permit, do the LISA evaluation, and then again, think about other locations that we can take this material to outside of Boone. But again, we've got to work through our system. So, be happy to answer your questions. And you know, again, we're in a mode of, are we on the right track? What else should we pursue?
Well, I think you're, from my perspective, you're absolutely on the right track. We are ahead of most counties in this regard. I think it's important to underscore, and Austin, this is more for you. We're not talking about creating a landfill here, right? We're talking about creating a temporary spot to stage materials in the event that we have a disaster, right? We have a tornado come through or something like that, and our facilities that normally take those things become overwhelmed. So we can't continue to take it to the Ames Center, we can't take it to the Boone landfill. We've got to have a place to put it where it's not just sitting on the side of the road. I've always liked the idea of seeing if we could enter into some kind of agreement with Martin Marietta. I think that they have the land. I think that there's reasonably easy access off of North Dayton and off of Riverside to get in there. I think it would be an interesting conversation to have with them. I like your idea of that it would only be activated in the event of a declared natural disaster, either by the governor or by the president, and just see if we can work through those things. Everywhere else, it feels to me, one of the thoughts I had is Ames is getting ready to bring in this industrial area out to 580th along the north side of Lincoln Way. Well, that's great. That's easy access. It's set relatively center of the county. But I would expect over the next 10 years that's going to develop. And it seems to me that we would prefer to put something in place that we can reliably believe is going to be there 10 years from now.
Right.
So I think you guys are absolutely on the right track. I appreciate the work you've put in. I appreciate you including Keith Morgan and Melissa Spencer. They're an outstanding resource for us. And like I say, I hope this is something we never have to activate. But if we ever do, we're going to appreciate having put in the work we put in.
Well, the other thing, too, is one site going to be in, you know,
right,
big enough? You know, you probably want to locate where you've got transportation network, whether it be the freeway, Highway 30,
yep.
You know, maybe one in the western portion, eastern portion, or go on the north side of 30 and maybe one 5 miles south of 30.
Well, I just believe you guys are absolutely on the right track. Ultimately, I believe this will require Board of Supervisor action in whatever recommendation you come through. Would your steps be, so you've included the Planning and Zoning Commission to this point, would your steps be to come back to them with some kind of recommendation,
right,
down the road?
We would have a plan that we would put together for them to act on and then come back to the Board of Supervisors.
So I think it would be helpful. I don't know when. Is there a point that Planning and Zoning and Emergency Management meets together? So I think it would be helpful if you'd invite Keith at some point. I'm sorry?
Isn't it at the end of August you have your
employee report? Yes, but that didn't include emergency management, right?
Unless we invited them.
And I think it'd be problematic to get the whole emergency management commission together to meet with planning and zoning, but it might be helpful to invite Keith Morgan to present to the planning and zoning commission about why this matters, what's important, and help facilitate whatever recommendation you guys might ultimately make to them. And I know Keith loves to give a presentation to anybody who will listen. So
he's doing one today.
Thanks for your input.
Absolutely.
Did you have any input? Just on a historic basis, have we ever had as a county to implement this type of operation?
Not that I'm aware of. But it's something that we definitely need.
Got that. Why are we tethered to Boone County with all the contiguous counties around us? I mean, you know, when you sit there and look at that, first of all, you just read about Boone. Why Boone?
I think a lot of it has to do with the agreement that we've got in place that was started in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else to tell you.
And there have been times that Boone has said we're not taking anymore for X amount of time, and it creates real issues for us.
I mean, when I hear somebody talk about a multiplicity of sites, you know, I would think that would almost, the additional part of the conversation would be the fact maybe there's somebody outside of Story County that'd be willing to host that. I would just offer it up as a suggestion. It's just like you don't know until you ask.
Right. In Polk County, there were a couple of sites that were ran by the private sector,
mm-hmm.
Where all this material, you know, is brought to you 7 days a week.
Right.
Which, you know, at some point in the future, maybe that might be possible.
Just, it's food for thought. I mean, obviously, you're staging this to bring it back to here for some action, and it's just like, okay, my feeling, my request would be the fact that is there anybody else on a partnership basis outside of Boone that would be willing to work with us where you're not sitting there looking at the map and looking at tax sale properties or whatnot. Maybe there's somebody out there we just don't know because we haven't asked.
Right. And the DNR does require us to kind of look beyond our current partners too, so that's going to be a part of this anyway.
Okay. Well, that's all I have.
So,
no more questions?
And then Emily's got her background on the mobile home.
Outstanding. Just what I want to talk about.
Okay, so we have visited four of the five mobile home parks in unincorporated Story County. Throughout June and a little bit into July. We did not visit Crestview specifically because they've been working so closely with the Board of Health and the Environmental Health Department to improve their water quality issues. We think it's probably more important to take care of the people first before the zoning regulations. So I'm just going to kind of skip over that. If you have any questions, I can try and answer your questions on that. But here are the locations, and I apologize, it's a little hard to see. Homestead is just north of Ames, Hickory Grove, northeast of Ames. We have Country Living outside of Colo, Rolling Hills down by Maxwell, and then Crestview is west of Ames there. So Homestead Colony was established in 1970, and the original part of the mobile home park was this kind of central portion on the map. They expanded in 1982 to include this western portion, and they are located in the residential manufactured home district. There are 77 lots. Currently they have two vacant lots. They do not have rental homes. And their water is provided by Xenia Rural Water. And feel free to ask questions as they come up. Homestead, here's some pictures of Homestead. I thought this was interesting. The original portion of Homestead doesn't have any sidewalks, but as our land development regulations change, this is the newer, the 82 expansion, and they were required to put in walkways. Homestead was very well taken care of. Here you can see their recreation area, and then back here is their storm shelter. Let's see. We thought Homestead was in great condition. We were really impressed with it. So moving on to Rolling Hills. Rolling Hills was established in 1977. It expanded, and the original portion was on the western side here. It expanded in 1995 to include this eastern portion. It is also in the residential manufactured home district. They have 123 lots, but as you can see, many of them are not in use right now. They just haven't had a need for them. They do have 8 camper sites. And those are located to the on the northern side of the park. They did get a conditional use permit in 2008 to use 4 of their lots for campers.
Part of the reason for the undevelopment mess of the property is they've got the mains in, but they haven't done the service connections.
Okay.
That's a cost that they would bear, but they haven't done yet.
Is there a market? I mean, it seems to me that would be market-driven. If they had people wanting to get in there, they would go ahead and provide the connections.
Yeah, they kind of said that until they have, you know, a waiting list of people, they're not going to do anything. Although, if there was someone that wanted to come in and was willing to pay for the connection,
right,
they'd be happy to work do that for them. Yep. They said it was something like $1,000 each for each connection, so it's, yeah, quite a bit. They do, Rolling Hills has 34 rentals. They currently have 12 vacant lots. The rentals are in the southern portion here. These are primarily, mostly, the newer homes are the rental homes, which is good to note. And their water is provided by Central Iowa Rural Water. Here's a picture of the camper lots. They're not, when we visited, they weren't full. I think that kind of changes as the need for temporary housing changes with, like, construction work. Rolling Hills did have quite a few with, like I said, they had 12 vacant lots, and they did have quite a few. This is an old deck sitting on a vacant lot. They leave those there so that they can rebuild them without getting a permit, I guess, to create an accessory structure deck. This is one of our biggest safety concerns in the parks. This is right next to the entrance of Rolling Hills. It's a huge drain with this kind of grate over top of it. And you can see it's really big, but it seems dangerous because this grate isn't attached to it.
It's not attached to the concrete.
So it can easily slide off.
The pipe has, you know, there's like metal bars that go across, but if that grate weren't there, you know, somebody's foot could get stuck in it or a bicycle.
Do we have any mechanism to deal with that?
We did contact the county engineering department, and it's a private drive. So
it's his liability if somebody were to get hurt. It's his liability.
We brought it to their attention.
Yeah. We include, we send each of the parks kind of a follow-up letter, and we included our concerns in that letter. But this is the road condition at Rolling Hills is a little bit, I mean, it wasn't as good as the other ones. They had some coal patch that was like improperly applied, which they were really upset about. But so you can see that it's really gravelly there.
Looks like a gravel drive.
and there's numerous cracks in the drive as well.
But again, a private drive, not a public street.
Right. Yep. Here are the newer rental homes, the rental units. This is the park storm shelter. It's also used as a community space and a laundry facility. This is we work pretty closely with the manager and owner of Rolling Hills to let them know of our expectations for when they have new homes coming in. They had a couple new ones right around this time that we were talking with them, and so
it worked out perfectly.
So we were able to, you know, take them through the process of what it was needed. So they're, I think they're clear on that now. So it's good.
Good to work with.
Yeah,
very
good.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hickory Grove was established in 1957. Hickory Grove is the legal non-conforming use of the four. It's located in the A1 district. There are 40 lots, no rental properties, and just one vacant lot there. They're served by Central Iowa Rural Water. Hickory Grove did just get a new drive this spring, which you can see here. It was really nice, very impressive. And before, prior to this, they just had a gravel drive, so the manager was really happy about that.
Marty and I were right across the street from there last night. Yes, we were.
Hickory Grove is also interested in a possible future expansion. Jerry has provided information to the owner about the steps necessary to do that. The expansion area would be to the north of the existing homes here.
So we'll wait to hear back from them on if they want to move forward.
It would involve a rezoning process and a development plan. So it would be a notification process that involved P&Z and the Board of Supervisors.
Feels like we had some issues with them a few years ago, too. I don't know if you guys have any record as before your time, but I don't remember the specifics. I remember that there were conversations.
Okay.
So that'd be worth digging into.
We have an out-of-state owner, California. That's what we're doing.
Hickory Grove is working to replace their storm shelter. This is their existing storm shelter that they're using for kind of like a storage building now, but they are... I got a call from an architect out of Des Moines that was asking about our standards for storm shelter, which is good. We will want those there. So there's a new drive. They are talking about getting a new sign, and we did inform them of our requirements for permit for signs. We also provided to all of the park managers and our development regulations and the process to meet those. This is an abandoned cable tower, which is located in the middle of Hickory Grove. People have, with the permission of the manager, attached their cable satellite or their satellite dishes, I guess.
So they're reusing it.
We did.
That doesn't seem overly safe to me.
We did express our concerns about that.
Concerned about kids maybe climbing it because it wasn't really fenced off or anything. But again, this is private property.
So,
height wise, I don't know, with probably what, 20 foot, maybe 25 feet high.
But
the tower's been there for a while. It's no longer used for its intended purpose now.
Who owns it?
They didn't really know. I mean,
whose property though?
Oh, who owns the property?
Yeah.
Well, it's on Hickory Grove property, right?
Right.
But at some point, they didn't own the town. I mean, I don't know if it was just abandoned by whatever cell company.
Yeah.
I'd like you guys to dig
into it.
Okay. Sure. And we did ask for, we did express our concerns about the safety.
What do we say now? So this, I'm sorry if I'm going down a different train of thought, but a new cell tower that's put up in Story County. So, for example, the wind towers that we have put up, we have a decommissioning process, right? There's a fund that says when those are no longer used, here's how they're going to be taken down, here's how the ground's going to be put back, here's who's responsible for it. Do we have anything like that for cell towers? And if not, should we?
I'd have to check, to be honest with you, but you're right. We do
have
for wind energy.
Yeah.
Because even though it's on private property, if it's not being used.
Yeah, I think we need to have a mechanism that says what happens when this is no longer used as an intended purpose. Does it become a place to hang DirecTV satellites or not?
Yeah. So this is the open area to the north of the existing lots, which is the area for future expansion. That's it on Hickory Grove. Country.
I saw one thing on Hickory Grove, feral cats.
Yes. So we had the manager at both Hickory Grove and Rolling Hills mentioned the feral cat issue. Part of the problem is that the animal control has tried to help in the past, and residents continue to feed and kind of take care of the cats that are there. A lot of times that they'll also bring in cats and then leave them when they move. So animal control struggles to find enough resources to keep up with those.
Amelia did find there's some information about a spayed and neuter program, I don't know if you recall
from,
that's available.
Iowa State.
Through Iowa State University. It's a free, and
I think they do a clinic once a year. They just pick up cats, spay or neuter them, and then release them back where they were found.
When we were there, we saw, I don't know, five or six running around. So
the problem is that five or six turns into 50 or 60 pretty quick.
Right. Mm-hmm.
our goal isn't to just, you know, do, you know, enforcement. We're trying to help them with other programs.
Absolutely. Well, and this is an animal control issue, but I appreciate if you guys revisit with animal control when we have these kind of problems and see what kind of solutions we can come up with.
Yeah, and that's why it was good to find that other. We did talk to animal control a little bit, and that they expressed concern just about resources to keep up with the issue. So.
I think when she was here at her reviews, there was like 100. She's got 125 cats, if I remember right.
Yeah, we're heavy right now, but for me, and Deb, I'll refer to you as I say this, for me, it is we don't get to just ignore a problem because it's a problem. Mm-hmm. We need to see what we can do to get it figured out, or as maintained as it can possibly be.
Right.
Okay. Country Living, once again, is located southwest of Colo. It was established in 1972. This original part to the west here, they expanded in 92 and included this eastern portion. This is also in the residential manufactured home district. They have a total of 40 lots, two rental units, and they currently have 9 vacant lots. Water is supplied by Central Iowa Rural Water. They are thinking about partnering with the city of Colo to partnering with the city of Colo for new sewage lagoons. What they would do is donate a portion of this land on the eastern side of the park to the city, and then they would hook up with the city sewage lagoon.
So there was talk at one time, and it was through Central Iowa Rural Water, to provide both service to Hickory Grove for us, but include this mobile home park. Do you know where that stands now? Did that die?
I don't know. We can look into that.
It didn't come up in our review or discussions with the park manager.
Check with Mike Cox, if you wouldn't mind, and just see where we are in all that, because they were included in that conversation.
Country Living, this is their recreation space, and then in the background there is their equipment storage. Their storm shelter is located underneath this storage building, and the manager said that all residents have a key to the building so they can get in case of an emergency.
Yeah, some of them were unlocked all the time, but like this one, they were issued keys to get in.
Mm-hmm.
How quick can you find the keys at Tornado's right now?
I probably could because I know where I put my keys, but yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
Good question to keep asking whether that's a reasonable thing for a storm shelter that's intended to service a community like this. It shouldn't be hard to get into.
Yeah, maybe if they, I don't know if they have issues with vandalism or, you know, other uses that go on that they're trying to avoid.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we did notice while we were there some kind of debris piles. They had quite a few vehicles located to the north, some junk, some this appliances, they had a burn pile. It's a little hard to see up on the screen, but there's a big pile of tires here. We did provide some resources to the park manager for getting rid of the tires, and also for other ways to get rid of the other debris items.
Well, there's a reasonable expectation, so we're going to help. We're going to provide information on the resources available, but then the second part of that is there's an expectation that this gets handled.
Right.
And we're going to follow up with them. In our letter, we gave them 60 days.
Okay.
The deal was. And they've got somebody that comes and gets these white items, the appliances. But they have like a debris pile that they do burning. And I think like some of this material is like blocks that they use for landscaping and different things. But we did bring up those issues, gave them a list of possible resources they could
could take some of these things, but we're going to follow up with them in 60 days.
Thank you.
No questions.
Really helpful. Really helpful. Good job.
Thank you.
You said no questions?
No questions.
All right.
No other, thank you again.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No other reports. Public forum number two, opportunities for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. Board will not take any action due to the privacy of the meeting law, but we might in the future. Anybody? Nope. Okay. Liaison assignments. Marty?
Multiples.
We had a busy week. Always a lot going on, Marty. That's the beauty of doing this.
It is surprising the degree how much you get involved in a multiple of them.
You better be ready to change hats quickly. Any announcements?
None.
All right. Take a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.
Thank you.